I'm Jana Whale. I'm from Gitimax First Nation on my dad's side. I'm also Cree Métis on my mother's side. I'm currently living in Tsleil-Waututh territory, also known as Nanaimo, in BC on Vancouver Island. And right now I'm working with the Canadian Climate Institute as a policy advisor in our newly created Indigenous research stream, which focuses on bridging Indigenous and Western ways of knowing and kind of generating relevant policy recommendations for governance using two-eyed seeing approach and decolonizing methodology, and really just using Indigenous knowledge in a way that informs better climate and adaptation planning and resilience as well. It always just seemed like my sister, she was 2 years older, and school was always very easy for her. Like she kind of, blazed through it. And oftentimes that kind of meant it was so easy that she didn't feel like she had to do all of her assignments. And, I quite enjoyed doing assignments and getting, that learning. And it would often be, reading her homework for her or going back over her questions just to see, what they were doing 2 years ahead of me and what I'd be getting into at that point. So just, really taking a keen interest in, academics from an early age and wanting to, just see if I could, I think a little bit of it was competitiveness as well, wanting to see if I could do what she was doing. But it was always fun getting to, go through her work and see what they were up to. I remember I did some of her English. It was more editing. It wasn't a whole lot of actually writing it, but she always preferred, we did French immersion. So she actually preferred doing the French stuff and I preferred doing the English stuff. So I'd read over her English work and I think she'd also read over my French work at times. Like we were pretty collaborative because we were only 2 years apart. So it was kind of cool to get to do that together. I'm working on the Indigenous research stream. So when I started with the Canadian Climate Institute, I was hired on as the adaptation associate. So I was working on their adaptation team. The Canadian Climate Institute has a couple of different streams of research, we call them. So there's adaptation, there's mitigation, and there's clean growth. And more recently, we've added a stream which focuses on kind of Indigenous research as a whole. So it's designed to be a little bit more cross-cutting and look for those synergies that exist between these, different streams of climate thought, essentially. And the kind of purpose of having an Indigenous research stream is one, to uplift, other Indigenous research happening across different organizations and different Indigenous experts that are working in the climate field, but also to kind of contribute, our own, expert advice on policy recommendations based on the research that we're doing kind of day to day. So our first research project, which is launching in June of this year, focuses on healthy energy housing, which is essentially looking at the intersection between housing and health and energy in Indigenous communities, which is something that Indigenous communities have been, asking for decades, knowing that there's a housing crisis and Indigenous communities are disproportionately impacted by, health impacts coming from housing. So those are kind of the things that we're working on currently at the Climate Institute and within our stream specifically. And also we run this really cool program called the Indigenous Perspectives Case Study, where we work with, 3 to 5 authors every year from different organizations to generate, Indigenous case studies focused on research that they want to see as well. And that's actually how I got hired with them, as I was a case study author initially, and after that I applied for a full-time position. I think, like for me, maybe it's not a specific issue, but I think it's this idea that, a lot of climate planning in Canada being done according to status quo and the way that we've been doing things for the past, 50 to 100 years is really focused on breaking the problems apart and looking at it kind of piecemeal in terms of what we're going to do to address climate change, how we're going to get to these places. Like we're pretty good at developing plans and strategies, but I think what a lot of these plans and strategies are still missing and where we need to build is looking at the connections between all of these ideas. I'm doing a series right now with CBC, and a lot of the conversation we're having is about how oftentimes when we're looking at the natural world and about climate impacts, this is more of a cascade of events. So one of the things that I've talked about in the past is flooding and flood risk. And we're talking about how are communities being impacted by flooding and what can we do to address flooding? And actually, communities in the past used to use traditional burning to address flooding, which is not something you typically think about. Fire and flood are treated as separate. But we know that large-scale fire events will actually decrease slope stability and make flooding more likely. So in terms of looking at it as a system, I think as we start to kind of look for those synergies and look for those connecting points in the natural world, I think that's where we're going to have a lot more success in terms of building climate resilience, you know, within our communities, but also as a country. So it's a question of connection and a question of scale for me in terms of what I see needs to happen in the future, but also, you know, where we need to be right now in terms of addressing climate impacts, you know, tomorrow, but also for the next 15, 20 years. A lot of the knowledge that I have is about those connecting pieces. And I think growing up like in my community and one of the ways that I maintained connecting to being a Gitxsan person, like my dad moved around a lot with work. So we moved away when I was a kid. And every year something we did was going back and harvesting salmon and seeing the, you know, the impacts to salmon in kind of a large scale way, looking at, you know, all of these connecting pieces that are starting to impact salmon. You know, you talk about temperature, you talk about acidity, you talk about water levels and heat. And looking at, you know, as a system, those are all the things that we need to be thinking about when we're talking about how to address, you know, climate resilience for fish. So I think in my day-to-day job, bringing that knowledge in and looking at these things as a system, looking at these things as more of a holistic understanding of how the world works. I think that's one of the ways that I bring my culture and my traditional knowledge into these climate conversations that are very used to breaking them down into smaller pieces and almost siloing these ideas. You know, something else that I'm working on right now is I'm working on a big research report that looks at the interconnection between adaptation and mitigation, which are often, again, treated as separate. So I think that's something that as Indigenous researchers, as Indigenous people working in climate change, that's an area that we're able to really contribute in as saying, no, these things are inherently connected and we need to manage for these connections rather than treating them as if they were separate. My understanding of adaptation is kind of looking at, okay, climate change is here. How do we prepare for and kind of live with this new climate reality? So it's really about looking for ways to address the climate crisis as we see it, whereas mitigation is really focused more on tons of emissions and looking at carbon emissions as kind of a connecting point in terms of kind of reducing those climate impacts. So they're related often in Western kind of understandings, but they are treated as separate given that one is more focused on living with this new climate reality and kind of figuring out where we need to build and change, whereas another is more focused on reducing levels of emissions in order to see climate results. Kitimat's First Nation, we really are a salmon people. The Gitxsan really rely on salmon as a source of protein. We rely on it in our feast halls and part of our culture. And also it's really important for the surrounding ecosystem in our territory. So lots of other animals in our territory really rely on fish like bears. It's really important for their diet as well, which then kind of feeds back into our ability to go out and harvest these animals too. So in terms of being connected to salmon, it's like I said, one of the ways that I was able to maintain my connection as a Gitxsan person. But it's also really important in a lot of our teachings and our oral histories as well. We've got lots of really good examples of salmon being used by our ancestors over time. And it's one of the things that's a connecting piece between us and our neighbors as well, given that salmon travel up the rivers through many different people's traditional territories too. So it really is a good example of how, you know, a shared resource needed to be managed in a good way between different people in order to kind of all benefit from this one resource. And there's a piece of reciprocity there because as salmon come up the river and we're able to take care of them, they also take care of us and giving back the ability to use in our feast halls to eat with our families and kind of maintain that connection to how we harvest the fish too. So there's teachings within that. So it's really, really difficult to understate the importance of salmon in our communities and how you know, interwoven they are throughout our entire culture for sure. For what I know from our territory, there's lots of different initiatives happening that aren't necessarily community specific, but they're kind of undertaken by, you know, different groups of people within the larger nation. A couple of them that I'm familiar with are the Guardians Program, which is typically associated with Kitinyal, so they're our neighbors. And they essentially run this on the land management program with their members that go out and do monitoring and assessments throughout the year. So they're really focusing on putting people back on the territory and on the land who are then able to kind of do these assessments in a way that makes sense for their community values and priorities and kind of generate different, you know, scientific approaches to managing their ecosystem within the bounds of Gitxaun culture. So that's a really good example. Another one that I've heard about recently is kind of reinvigorating this idea of traditional burning in our territory. So, you know, if you look at where Gitimax is on a map, we're within the interior cedar hemlock zone and it's a little bit wetter. We've got lots of rain throughout the year. And typically when we hear about traditional burning, we hear about more, you know, the southern nations that had fire regimes that kind of operated on a regular basis. But actually our communities also use traditional burning to kind of reinvigorate berry patches and medicine patches. There's an initiative currently happening, which is focused on mulguis, which is what our people use to kind of cleanse and smudge, also called Indian hellebore root. And also samai or huckleberry is another kind of target species for our communities and kind of reinvigorating this traditional burning. So that's starting to happen in our communities as well to kind of really get back to our, you know, our agricultural practices too. So there's quite a few initiatives happening in our territory. I think in the next 5 years, something that I like to think about and in terms of being, you know, a climate optimist, I'd really like to see more Indigenous people included in these processes when we're talking about making policy recommendations and making climate plans and generating these, you know, strategies for how we're going to mitigate and adapt climate change. I think by having more Indigenous representation at these decision-making tables, we're going to be in a lot better of a place. So in terms of being optimistic for the next 5 years, I'd like to see more Indigenous people in these spaces. I'd like to see more you know, community-led initiatives that are being taken seriously and are properly funded and supported by governments. And I'd like to see, you know, more governments themselves looking at ways of how Indigenous knowledge can contribute and kind of revitalize how we're talking about climate change and climate planning in our country. I think that's kind of the next step here in terms of really building resilience to climate change. I think, like, in terms of giving advice to youth, I would really say just go for it. Like, I think there's a lot of you know, challenge, and it is a hard path being, you know, so involved in really climate change work, and it is difficult on your spirit and your mental health. But I would say just really look for those opportunities where you can engage in these ideas in a good way. And I really look at it as a way of giving back. You know, the more that I'm able to do today will mean that there's less for, you know, the youth of tomorrow. So if you think about it in terms of a bit of a reciprocal relationship, I think it really helps kind of take a little bit of that stress off and just be persistent. There's going to be a lot of opportunities out there and we definitely need youth involved. So yeah, definitely, yeah, get into it.